What I'll be talking about today about different type of modeling approaches for count data when there's too many zeros and too long a tail, mixed effects, mixed distribution modeling as a powerful approach to analyze public health data. So for a brief overview, I have no relationships to close as far as financial obligations. For an overview, first I'll give you a kind of brief introduction about the importance of count data when it comes to public health, providing then an overview of different modeling approaches you can use to analyze count data, then talk about specifically mixed effects, mixed distribution modeling as one approach when there's data demonstrating too many zeros and too long a tail in its distribution, give you an applied example within a therapeutic judicial intervention context for mixed effects, mixed distribution modeling, as well as giving some conclusions as far as utility for public health applications. So counting matters from the field of public health. You may think about the field of occupational environmental health safety within public health, and we have here a work injury claim. Hopefully for most work environments, you're seeing that most businesses have zero incidences of health and safety ramifications. However, those that do may have a very small number of incidences. So this kind of distribution would be appropriate for many type of distribution approaches for modeling count data, such as Poisson or negative binomial. However, you have different special considerations you make for this example here. What we see here is a very complicated medication regimen with many pills over many days. But this might be hard for any individual in particular, but also for individuals with severe mental health disorders, it may be almost impossible to adhere to the level of medication adherence. So you may have, for many individuals, having 0 days of actual adherence to their quite complicated regimen, but those individuals who are better suited and better capable, those individuals may have high the number of days of adherence, demonstrating that kind of too many zeros and too long a tail distribution. So in modeling count data, Poisson regression is kind of the base of where you start from. It offers a powerful approach to analyze count data that can be incorporated into multi-level and hierarchical analyses that overcomes the assumptions of violations for ordinary least squared regressions. First and foremost, the assumption of normally distributed data. As we all know, you can't have negative count outcomes. So Poisson regression is the kind of the starting point for modeling count data. The violations of these assumptions or in least squared regression results in inaccurate parameter standard errors, as well as increases the likelihood of type 1 errors in your models. So one assumption that Mary mentioned earlier was the requirement of equidispersion when you're modeling Poisson regression. And what equidispersion essentially means that the conditional variance of your model, the residuals, is equal to the conditional mean. However, this assumption is often not met in real-world data. And similar to violations of ordinary least squared regression model, violations of equidispersion within Poisson models results in inaccurate parameter standard errors as well as higher probability of type 1 errors. Negative binomial regression models attempt to deal with these violations of equidispersion and allowing for both under or over dispersion based upon an extension of the Poisson model. Negative binomial regression models function by assuming that there's unexplained variability among individuals with the same predicted value. However, negative binomial models may not be appropriate when there are extra or excessive zeros, kind of leading to the type of zero-inflated models that Mary discussed earlier. There's a variety of models that exist to account for the zero-inflated nature of count data, such as zero-inflated Poisson models or zero-inflated negative binomial models. But all these models function by specifying two models along with their covariance. First, the occurrence of the event with a logistic model approach, and then also the intensity using a Poisson or negative binomial distribution as appropriate. However, we do see instances where there's a zero-inflated nature, but they're also too long a tail in our distribution. So there's a high degree of skew among non-zero values. This is kind of a phenomenon that we can call semi-continuous data. Mixed effects, mixed distribution models best account for this type of semi-continuous data that demonstrate both a high number of excessive zeros as well as a high degree of skew among non-zero values. Mixed effects refers to both the inclusion of both fixed and random effects in study models. And mixed distribution refers to both the estimation of both logistic and Poisson regression models as well as their covariance. So for an applied example, I mentioned earlier I work in the field of therapeutic interventions for people with behavioral health disorders. But for this specific study context, we're dealing with the issue of prescription drug abuse among individuals getting involved with the justice system. Prescription drug abuse is an emerging public health concern, and unlike other drugs of abuse, disproportionately affects women as compared to cocaine or heroin, which is men have higher rates of abuse. So for this study, we looked at a drug court intervention program, and what drug courts are, basically, they provide people the opportunity to get treatment for their substance abuse issues as opposed to direct incarceration. And so this program focused on women with prescription drug abuse issues in the Tampa Bay region of Florida. So this kind of really has the perfect opportunity, this sort of data situation, to demonstrate the too many zeros and too long a tail. Drug court interventions are an opportunity, but also a huge responsibility, where individuals go to anywhere between 2 to 4 random drug screens every week. And so there's most people know that they will be tested for drugs. It's part of the program. And so most people won't use. So we have a high number of zeros. We have some people that will relapse and come back into the program, demonstrating a small number of a small level of non-zero values. However, those kind of rampant hardcore addicts that really can't help themselves and have high number of days of use. So this really gives us a prime example of a distribution with too many zeros and too long a tail. So for the study variable, we had 4 points in time, a baseline, 3-month, 6-month, and 12-month follow-up assessments, and we asked individuals to report the number of days in the past 90 days they used specific types of drugs. We then summed those number of days together to get an aggregate composite variable related to the number of days, really kind of reflecting the magnitude of substance use. We used, what's interesting, with these multiple points in time, we had both the ability to include linear and quadratic effects at times and growth curve modeling procedures. However, the prescription drug abuse is something that's more can be more of an issue among younger adults versus older adults. So we wanted to determine whether younger adults, defined as those 18 to 26, had higher rates of use and different rates of change compared to the older adults. Now, I know 18 to 26 or 27 older seems pretty young for older adults, but this is based upon an existing body of criminologic literature that says people tend to age out of criminal offending in their late 20s. So our research questions were twofold. First off, do participants reduce their substance use over time? And secondly, do younger and older adults differ in their rate of change over time? So looking at the assumptions of the appropriateness of mixed effects, mixed distribution modeling, what did we find? We found that there's a lack of equidispersion with an overdispersion parameter greater than 2, suggesting that there was a greater degree of variance than what would be expected. We also found a large number of extra or excessive zeros. As you can see from the slide here, individuals at baseline, 25% reported no use at all, and then 61, 73, and 81 at 3, 6, and 12-month follow-ups. In addition to a high number of zeros, we also see the too long a tail effect with a high degree of skew among non-zero values, with skew values ranging from 1.65 to 3.65 across the 4 periods of time points assessed. So I want to give you an example, a visual example of what the actual data distribution looks like. On the y-axis, we see the frequency of individuals, and then on the x-axis, we have that composite number of days of substance use. For the baseline, these are baseline data here, so we had a sample of roughly over 200. So you can see 50, or roughly a quarter of the sample reported no zeros, but we see a really high degree of skew among non-zero values, with individuals reporting up to, I believe, over 160 days of that composite aggregate level of use. So something like that might think, for what to translate into practical occurrence, is someone using 2 to 3 drugs every day, reporting across the time period assessed. So this is the first part of the model. We looked at the predicted occurrence. This slide may be a little bit difficult to read, but on the y-axis, we have the predicted occurrence from 0 to 1 of any substance use at baseline. And then across the x-axis, we have predicted points across the 12 months that were assessed. Younger adults are in the bold solid line, and older adults are in the dashed line. Couple points to note. Consistent with our hypotheses, we see that younger adults are more likely to use at baseline. Consistent with our hopes, we see that there is association with program participation with reduced levels of substance use over time. And then also interestingly, we see that the interaction effects between age cohort and the linear and quadratic effects of times were not significant, suggesting that younger and older adults improve their level of substance use at the same rate of change. We see similar results with the predicted intensity of the number of days of use among non-zero values. Consistent with the previous slide, we do see that, yes, younger adults have higher levels of use, there's improvement in the sample, and also that there's no significant interaction terms, suggesting that the groups got better at the same rate of pace. So in study conclusions, we saw that there were significant reductions in levels of substance use across the sample participating in drug court intervention. Younger adults had higher levels of baseline levels of substance use compared to older adults. However, the two groups did not differ in their rate of change. So these results have kind of twofold implications, first being that this drug court intervention was effective in reducing the substance use levels of participants, and also suggests that there might be higher levels of treatment need among younger adults. So what did we do with these findings? This was not just research done in a vacuum. We presented these results to court with findings used to apply for and receive a new grant to, instead of focusing on women with prescription drug abuse, to focus on younger adults, because that's the higher level of treatment need. And this focus on younger adults included the inclusion of both more frequent and more intensive treatment contacts in the next iteration of the program development. So applications for public health. Mixed effects, mixed distribution modeling is a powerful approach to analyze public health count data. Public health count data are ubiquitous within the field of public health. However, they require a variety of assumptions and considerations to be met, the presence of equidispersion, a lack of a sex of zeros, and then also a lack of skew among non-zero values. There's a variety of different modeling approaches you can get to get there, but if you do have overdispersed data with excessive zeros and high degrees of skew among non-zero values, mixed effects misdistribution modeling represents the best procedure to both reduce bias in your parameter estimates, reduce your likelihood of type 1 error, and they both also reflect the correlated nature of both the occurrence and the intensity of the outcome. This is the grant. It was a Substance Abuse Mental Health Substance Services Administration Treatment Grant, and that's my contact information if you have any questions. Thank you.
Once again, we do have time for a couple of questions.
Yes, okay. It's a very interesting talk, and I liked it, but for something just caught my attention. When you said the negative binomial for either under-dispersion or over-dispersion, I can see it only for over-dispersion, because when you, Poisson, it's an intensity parameter, when you put a gamma, then you get the negative binomial, and in that case, you can, in that way, you can only increase the variance, you cannot get less. So under-dispersion, that word somewhat of caught my attention.
Okay, yes, I believe that's correct. The important thing with the negative binomial assumes that you'll have a difference in your prediction.
Not using the same. Okay. So it's over-dispersion.
Yeah, that's typically how I've seen it. Yes, sir.
Any other questions? Let's thank one more time.